Well, I'm going to report a work that is still in progress, knowing the risks of doing that because some of the stuff can be subject to some corrections. But it is a very simple problem, and it's essentially a toy model. I'm not going to claim that. I will be modeling realistic galaxies or groups of galaxies, but nevertheless, it's a very simple toy model in which you use an exact solution. That is, you involve a nonlinear collapsing regime. The idea is to look at how volumes and masses can be computed in an inhomogeneous spacetime, because a lot of the computations involving mass and volumes is still done using a Newtonian consideration. That is, suppose you see a galaxy, and you model this galaxy somehow by a blob, by a spherical blob. And so how do astrophysicists take the volume of this object? Well, they do it in a Newtonian way. And I think that if you introduce a full general relativistic evaluation of the volume, you might get surprising results. That is, you might find that the object has more mass than what it would have if you would compute the volume thinking that the object is Newtonian. So let me state the problem in very broad terms. Suppose you have a fish tank or a fridge that is one foot, and then you want to know how much fish you have there, okay? So essentially you do number counts. So you see how many, you count them, you try to count them. However, you might not see all the fish because they pile on top of each other, or the door is not totally transparent. You have some external indicator, for example, Tontina, my cat, it's an external indicator. So I assume that the fridge is 1 cubic foot, and I have a fish density of about 10 pieces of fish per cubic foot. So I assume that I have 10 fish masses. So how come my cat is wagging the tail and indicating and saying there are more? There are like 100 fish masses. So I have an external indicator, and I also have the number counting. So are there dark fish around? So essentially the idea is that if you measure this fridge were in curved space, it might have a larger volume. And so you might have more fish, which is sensed by the cat. But the number counting doesn't show it up. So that's right. So this fell down. Sorry. Yeah. So this is the idea in okay. I'm sorry. So this is the whole the idea in broad terms. And so let's see what happens when the Newtonian. Here you have I'm modeling. I'm really going to very, very simple models. There's no rotation. These are not astrophysically realistic objects, but nevertheless, because the equations are so difficult, we do have exact solutions that describe this type of very simple objects. So in a Newtonian case, we have a spherical blob, and there is a density. And of course, we identify a locus that it would be like the boundary of the object. Small r will be identifying fluid layers in the Lagrangian sense, Lagrangian coordinate, while a capital Y will be the physical radius. So we do have a locus that we call the center. If you are in the center of that spherical object, you will see an isotropic world. All the layers either recede from you or fall towards you. So that's a definition of the center, and then the boundary. And so we can always, to each fluid layer, we can attach a physical radius, which will be a scale factor times R, which R is labeling the layers. So you compute the volume with this usual formula, and from this you can always compute the mass, which essentially is an integration over the density field. So we know, and this is to do it in a Newtonian way. So, but we know that astrophysical objects are not always Newtonian. In fact, we know that horrible things are happening in the center of galaxies, galactic nuclei, whatever. So, and they're not always Newtonian. So, what if we start computing our volumes and masses with full GR, even for simple models? So far, I've sampled the literature, and there is not much on this. There are some. There is some group of people that are doing work on the averaging problem in GR, which is a major theoretical endeavor. And what I'm doing is would be like sort of the zero level, zero 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 level of that theory. But there is only one paper I found in 1985 that does volume matchings with this type of models that I will shortly introduce. So now let's see how can we do this with GR. I'll hurry up because it's only 15. Okay, so the view from space-time is as follows. See, this is a view from space-time. Now I presented the Newtonian approach. Now in space-time we do have I'm going to be representing these disks are really spheres. So I'll beg your intuition to think of this as spheres evolving. So a one-dimensional circumference would be a two-sphere. And here's our world line, and here we are looking at one of these spherical objects. And of course, we will represent layers. For example, this is the central layer that we attach the label R equals zero and has a physical radius of Y equals zero. And we can normalize the boundary so that the boundary will be small r equals one. And of course, we're going to consider spherical symmetry, so general metric for spherical symmetry, and assume as the source a simple perfect fluid, which can be generalized to any fluid. That means we have a four-velocity field that could be commoving. We have a spatial metric. And of course, we can evaluate the determinant of this spatial metric. And then the computation of the volume. 5 minutes. Yeah, I have to hurry. Computation of the volume is on these lines, but it is different from the Newtonian. Now, how much different? Well, first, the introduction of curvature can make a difference in the evaluation of this type of volumes. You can see this by embedding a three-dimensional surface in four dimensions, and so you can see that, for example, in the Newtonian case, the larger you have non-ambiguous definition of exterior. Your center is interior, and as small r grows, the physical radius grows as well. So it's very simple to define interior and exterior, but you can have a curvature in such a way that the physical radius actually decreases for external layers. So, and in fact, you can even have a situation in which this is extreme. See, you can have a situation in which
I don't need it. What we see, it's actually very small. Here we are seeing a very small surface, but we do not suspect that the interior can be very large.
So we can have extremely different.
We can have very, very different volumes, very different. And we can even have a situation in which there is no center. It could be a classical wormhole. Now, classical wormhole, the center can be defined as a fixed point of the
rotation group. And so we can have a case in which the symmetry center is not there. It's not in space-time. And space-time can be regular, and this would be a case of classical wormholes. And you might have people think that if you have a wormhole of this type, you violate energy conditions. That is true in some cases, for example, statical space-times. But it's not true in general. In fact, there are solutions. The Lemaître-Tolman Bondi, whose source is dust, that have these characteristics, don't violate any energy condition, and you can even generalize them to perfect and imperfect fluids with nice equations of state. And so just to end, so what's the result I found? The result is I take these very simple analytical models. The source is dust. These solutions are very old. They are known since the 1930s. But still, they are very useful because they are inhomogeneous, they are exact. And what you obtain by computing the mass integral, by the way, there is no unique way of computing this mass integral. There are several challenging definitions. There is a paper by Tavakol and Mena, which shows that you can generalize concepts like Newtonian contrast or Newtonian mass to many, many different ways. But I'm taking the simplest possible using the Occam's razor's argument. So if you can describe a concept with a simple expression, why use a very complicated expression? So this is the simplest mass integral. And so you can identify this parameter m as the Newtonian mass as long as k is zero. But k is somehow an average of the three-dimensional curvature scalar. I don't have time to present the details, but in order, we take these equations, we do an initial value problem of them, and what we find, taking very, very simple king-like, you know, the king models for defining, you know, a density profile in astrophysics, we input this form of initial densities, and what we obtain is that the mass ratio can be three times as much as the Newtonian case. It coincides with similar results done by Helleby in 1985, except that Helleby did it in a much more restricted way. We're doing it much more general, considering more density profiles than this one. But so far, using the King model, we get three times. That means that you see a galaxy and say, well, the mass of this galaxy is whatever quantity in grams, but actually it could be three times as much. And well, you can say, oh, you're not solving the dark matter problem, you need a factor of 100. So how come you have only three? But my reply to this is that this is just the beginning. We might find more and also not to solve the dark matter problem, but a factor of three can be important for once we have better measurements. So the whole idea is that classical general relativity might have something to say in important items that are important problems of modern cosmology. That's I think if we do not compute our masses and volumes correctly, we might be dragging systematical errors, and it's important to look at them. Thanks. I do not have time to talk about that, to say about the number counts. But another interesting thing is if you look at this blob, the spherical blob, suppose it's very curved inside. You might have particle horizons. Of course, this is under the model. This model would allow you to have a particle horizon. So here you are looking at this blob, and here you are, and this is all what you see. This is your horizon. So there is a big chunk that is causally disconnected from you. So the number counts might actually fail because you can only see a certain bit of it. If the object is big enough, of course, the next question would be if cosmological inhomogeneities have this highly curved profile, how they formed? What was the seed that formed this highly curved? And this we don't know, but also we know that inside of galaxies, in the center of galaxies, we might have very, very strange phenomena going on. So it relates in this way. The answer would be that number counts might be very insufficient to determine volumes with highly curved spacetimes. Thanks.